Hello, welcome everybody. Thank you for attending our session this evening entitled Mormons in the ERA. This is session 172. So before we begin, just want to ask everybody to please check your cell phones, make sure that the ringers are turned off, and ask you to be respectful and attentive. It's the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. We invite all here to practice looking at all Mormon experiences as legitimate Mormon experiences, no matter how diverse they may be. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. We also hope you're taking time to purchase goods from vendors, including booksellers like Benchmark Books. Please support Mormon Studies by supporting our vendors. And our vendor that I work for is the Detainee-Ally's letter writing booth, and you should all go make a postcard for a detained migrant. Shill my own stuff. This session is 90 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can end on time. Please make sure to pick up your belongings as you leave, and we look forward to seeing you bright and early tomorrow. Each morning, the first 50 attendees get a doorbuster prize, so get here early. So this presentation today is about the Equal Rights Amendment, which has a long history beginning in 1923. It's still not part of the U.S. Constitution. This would guarantee constitutional equality of the sexes. The LDS Church had an impact on the bill's inability to be ratified by the arbitrary deadline, yet there has been a recent shift within the church. The ERA is back in the spotlight. We will discuss the history of the ERA, why and how it is still relevant, and what it will take to be ratified. So we have two panelists here with us today. Anessa Rochetta is on the leadership board of the ERA Task Force Arizona and Mormons for ERA. She's the Arizona State Chair of Citizens Advocacy for CARE, a leading international humanitarian organization. She's a CARE Fellow. Her fellowship included a learning tour to Benin in West Africa in 2016 to witness U.S. investments in development, with a particular focus on women and child health. She won the ICANN Award in 2017, a national award for advocates, which was presented to her by Senator Flake. Anessa is also on the United States Global Leadership Coalition Arizona Advisory Committee. As you can see, she is passionate about women's equality here and abroad. She spends much of her free time volunteering, advocating, and speaking on the issues of social justice and women's equality. Anessa graduated from Arizona State University with a bachelor's in sociology, with a minor in women and gender studies in 2017, while raising her three children with her husband in Mesa, Arizona. Sarah Raines works as a midwife, doula, and lactation specialist. A native of San Francisco, Sarah moved to Utah in 2003 to pursue her bachelor's of science degree from Brigham Young University in sociology and international development, focusing on international women's health. It was at BYU where she first became involved in activism, organizing protests and rallies. Co-president of the Feminist Club on campus, she received her doula training in 2005, after which she lived in India for 6 months researching birth and breastfeeding practices as part of a field study program. She then went on to pursue midwifery at the Midwives College of Utah in 2013, where she teaches an intro to breastfeeding education to new student midwives. Sarah also received her CLE, Certified Lactation Educator Certificate, from UC San Diego in 2012. Yay, San Diego. She is a co-founder of the Brianna Project, a nonprofit that provides care throughout the childbearing years of homeless, refugee, and underserved women throughout northern Utah. Rebecca McHood was supposed to be on the panel today and regrets that she won't be able to join us. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to our panelists, and I will knock on the door at about, or I'll wave you guys down at about six so we can shift to questions at the end, okay?
Thank you. Do you want to take this with you? Well, thank you guys for being here. It's a small group. We're going to talk, so I'm Anessa from that long introduction you got. And as you've seen, I've been a community advocate focusing on women's issues for the past 6 years through various organizations. And right now I'm helping lead Mormons for ERA and the ERA Task Force AZ. And right now it's really relevant. And you heard Sarah. So we are co-chairs right now of the Mormons for ERA organizations. I was here 4 years ago with Chelsea Shields and Mark Barnes talking about the Equal Rights Amendment. Were any of you here 4 years ago? So it'll be two of you. Okay, so what's exciting is that we have a lot more to share of what's happened in the last 4 years, so, and why it's more relevant today than it was 4 years ago, especially, you know, what we can do. I also want to get to that part. We're going to talk about the basics of the ERA and the history, the plans for the ERA, and what our role can be in getting in attaining this goal. So this is the language of the Equal Rights Amendment. It is three sections. The Equal Rights Amendment is a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution designed to guarantee equal legal rights of all American citizens regardless of sex. It seeks to end legal distinctions between men and women in terms of divorce, property, employment, and other matters. It says, the first line was what would be added to the Constitution: equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on the account of sex. And the other two sections give power to Congress and when it would go into effect. So it seems pretty simple when you read it just in that one sentence, especially in 2019. It seems weird that there's any controversy over this. And to quote the author of the ERA, Alice Paul, she said, "There is nothing complicated about ordinary equality." So that's what we're trying to get across, is how basic and ordinary this is. It doesn't say women. It says on the basis of sex. So it should protect anyone that is being discriminated on the basis of sex in our Constitution. So in 1923, Alice Paul wrote the Equal Rights Amendment because she was well aware, after the long, hard battle for suffrage for women, that was the only right women had guaranteed in our Constitution. The ERA was introduced every year without ever getting a floor vote for decades. All this time, women were denied access to education and career opportunities, faced discrimination in their pay and safe working environments. There were limitations in women with land rights and credit and divorce rights. Many reproductive rights were denied and are denied, including access to contraceptives. There was not even a word for domestic violence. Marital rape was not illegal. And many more challenges were placed upon half the population. All white women and some women of color could vote, but it wasn't until after defeating Jim Crow laws that gave access for all women to vote. And they used that vote. And we went by legislative actions to gain our rights. We had to chip away one discriminatory law at a time for decades, and it's exhausting, state by state, one by one. And so we continue to do so. But in 1972, the ERA passed Congress and was signed by President Nixon, and 22 states ratified it that year. But Alice Paul did not join the cheering crowds. She saw this arbitrary deadline that was attached to the ERA's preamble would be the ultimate defeat for the ERA, and she was almost right. It was given a 7-year deadline, and then most amendments were never given a deadline. And it seems to be that it might have been intentional to give such a short deadline. But then in 1979, we had 35 states ratify by 77, but Congress decided to extend the deadline 3 more years to give more states time to ratify. We need 3/4 majority of states to ratify an amendment that goes into the U.S. Constitution after it passes Congress. And when the deadline hit in 1982, we were 3 states shy, so it has not been ratified. I want to show some pictures from that time period. You have supporters of the ERA. You have those trying to stop it. It became very volatile. In the late 70s and early 80s, after this huge surge of support, there was a big conservative backlash to stop the ERA. It was no longer on the Republican platform as it had been before, and the church was part of that intense opposition. So, what I love to this quote by Shirley Chisholm, because so many times people think the Equal Rights Amendment is not going to solve all the things, it's not going to stop prejudice, and they're still going to face issues. But the way that she worded it is, of course, laws will not eliminate prejudice from the hearts of human beings, but that is no reason to allow prejudice to continue to be enshrined in our laws, to perpetuate injustice through inactions. So, Mormons for ERA, with Sonia Johnson leading at the time, gained national attention. And at the same time that the church was leading a strong and well-funded campaign to oppose the ERA. If you can see, it's super small. There is a couple of banners that flew over the temple. One of them said, "Heavenly Mother loves Mormons for ERA." This one says, "ERA, the pearl of great price." This is Sonia Johnson being arrested after she chained herself to the temple. And this is former Michigan Governor George Romney, who was opposing it because it would be a boost for gays. So a lot of the opposing viewpoints at the time have come to fruition without the ERA. And this right here, does anyone recognize this? This is the pamphlet that the church sent out to stop the ERA. Millions of people got this, including my never Mormon Methodist grandmother in East Texas. I found this in her closet when we were going through her things. But it basically says why it's a moral issue and why the church should oppose it. And all of its points are simply, here's the basic thing. They say, we believe in equality, just not the Equal Rights Amendment. And because the moral issue is that it would help gays get married, women would fight in combat, women would leave the home in droves and enter the workforce. And all of those things have happened without the ERA. And so there's not a lot of arguments that work anymore to oppose. Where am I? So, drumroll, guess what? The ERA is not dead. We all assumed it was for many years. And even though there was continued work to revive it and pass it since 1982, there hasn't been much attention or progress until 2016. I wonder what happened that year. So many big events and steps towards success has been made in the last 3 years. So I'm going to share those. First, what started for many women is President Trump being elected. Millions of women and men marched all over the world in the Women's March as either in an effort to resist or protest a man that bragged about assaulting women being elected to the highest office, or to bring awareness of discrimination women are still facing. This walk ignited months and months of organizing for all kinds of issues. Did you know the ACLU has quintupled since Trump was won? So there's a lot of attention now. The best and most amazing thing that happened is that in 2017, Nevada ratified the ERA almost 40 years after the latest state to have done so. That was led by Senator Pat Spearman. And then the Me Too movement, the same year, 2017, the Me Too movement was revived. In 2006, the phrase was coined by Tara Burke to help women who have survived sexual violence. But as an anti-sexual harassment movement now, the past couple years, we have seen many powerful men finally face consequences. Countless women have come forward with allegations, sharing stories from public and private spaces, keeping the embers lit for activism. And not just men, many men have come forward as well. So here is the status right now. Do you notice that Nevada is in light purple and so is Illinois? We have 37 states that have ratified the ERA. The ones in yellow have not. And if you notice Arizona and Utah there, that's going to be our focus. Because in 2018, Illinois ratified the ERA, led by a pro-choice Republican white man. And they ratified it last year. So now we are only one state shy. This year, we came really close to having 38 states that are needed for the three-fourths because Virginia got a vote. We had several states with bills in play. Virginia's got theirs all the way to a vote, and it lost by a tie, 50-50. So they have elections this year, and there's a lot of attention on Virginia. I would not be surprised if next year they're successful. And that's big news. So this is the Illinois senator that came to Arizona, and that was our Republican forum. He's traveling the country now trying to help other states be as successful as Illinois was last year.
Can I ask?
Yes.
So it was back in the 70s they got all these states to ratify it. Are you saying they just pick up where they left off?
I was going to get into all of the weeds, but I will explain that right now since we're talking about it. Because there was a deadline in the preamble, it's not what the states voted on. And there's legal scholars that believe that the deadline was unconstitutional. So if 38 states were to ratify the ERA, there's going to be a legal battle in courts whether or not it counts. So there is different strategies, and that's one, is to keep ratifying and then fight it in court. But we don't want to fight it in court, so I'm going to explain how we can avoid that soon. Yes, because there is a way. They've changed the deadline before. It's up to Congress. It's not up to states. It's not up to the administration. It's not up to courts to change that deadline. It's up to Congress. So Congress has the power to change it again. They've done it once. They can do it again. There's two bills in play. They're bipartisan bills that are in our House and Senate, in the U.S. Senate right now, that we could hopefully get through. And it lifts the deadline and allows us to continue to the ratification process. Continuing what happened today, that was my next talking point. So Senate Joint Resolution 6 and House Joint Resolution 38 have been introduced with bipartisan sponsorship. Senator Murkowski and Senator Cardin are the co-sponsors for SJ Resolution 6. So I would write those numbers down. If you care about this, I'm hoping that you guys will talk to people that can vote on this. And we are going to have an action later right now for you to reach Romney and Lee on this specific point. But another big shift that happened earlier this year in January is that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints shifted their stance on the ERA to neutral, which is a huge, if you've been a part of this for the last few decades, this is a huge step, and it's allowing more of Mormons to feel comfortable supporting it. They have refused to put out a public statement. So what happened was a state senator wanted to support the ERA. He called. They are given a private line to talk about politics if you're an elected official with the church. So he called the line and wanted to know what the church's stance is on the ERA, if he can co-sponsor this bill in Arizona. And he was told that they are neutral. And then when we pressed to get a public statement, and so did Salt Lake Tribune and several other media outlets wanted a public statement, they basically said, we're not making a public statement. We're out of this fight right now, which is also a big shift. That's the news, is that they're unwilling to say that they oppose it, and they're unwilling to say that they support it. They just basically say, we tell our members to research their issues and trust their legislator and vote accordingly, which basically translates to, we're out of this fight and we're not making a position, which is a big deal, because in the past they felt like they opposed gay marriage and they opposed the ERA because they thought it would infringe upon their religious rights, that they would be forced to ordain women or be forced to perform marriages with gay people in the temple. And religious rights are so protected in our country. It's part of the First Amendment. Religion is considered a protected class. That has not happened. So I think that that's why they're neutral and they're not going to fight it, is because they know it won't infringe upon their religious rights. So here are our next steps. So and I was going to mention a couple other exciting things this year. If you guys were paying attention to the presidential candidates during the Democratic debates on national stage, ERA got 3 name drops. So people are talking about it. It's in national news. We've had celebrities talking about it. We were having candidates talk about the ERA. After all of this time, it's back in the spotlight. People want to support lifting the deadline, and we want it in our Constitution. Every Constitution that we have helped with other countries the United States made sure that they had some kind of statement in their Constitution about equality of the sexes, but yet we were never able to get ours across the finish line. We were never able to shift our Constitution to reflect that. And we only have 22 states that have state ERAs or state equal rights amendment. And Utah is one of them, but depending on where you live, it's going to cause problems if one state has one and one state doesn't. And another great thing is the national women's soccer team just won the World Cup, and there's a lot of spotlight on the gender pay gap. So they've brought and people are connecting the dots with that, with the Equal Rights Amendment. So that's also in the national media because of that. And another difference with this wave of ERA activism compared to the 70s is how much more diverse individual and organizations are. Like, historically, the ERA groups were very white. And but now, for example, like Nevada's Dr. Pat Spearman that helped ratify the ERA in Nevada, she is a woman of color, she's gay, and she's a military veteran. And then Illinois, Representative Steven Anderson is a white man, and he's pro-choice Republican. So, and the National ERA Coalition President, Carol Jenkins, is a black woman. So a lot of diverse communities are talking about this because we realize that women of color have more, that intersection of more discrimination based on their color and their gender. So I would urge all of us to collaborate with diverse groups to talk about this topic. So now what? 2 main goals is lift the deadline, get our representatives to co-sponsor and support these two resolutions, which would end the deadline, and get one more state to ratify. So I think we've got this. We're so close, and a lot of attention and support and money are now behind this to have our founding documents support this. But we need to talk about the whys. Like, why most people I get a lot of times is like, we don't need this. We're already equal. And I would tell them that, yes, we have a lot of equality, and all of those are done by statutes, and it's not as permanent as a constitutional amendment. We could take step backwards, and we have. So the Violence Against Women Act has to be renewed every 5 years, and it wasn't renewed or funded this year. And we could take step backs, but if it's in our founding documents, we won't. So I would say, in short, that people are still discriminating based on sex. The ERA will raise that level of scrutiny and judicial review to strict scrutiny. It would create a protected class like race, religion, and national origins. But we don't want to halt our efforts. We don't want to go back. So we want to make our rights that we have gained permanent, and that would be putting it into the Constitution. Polls show that 80% of Americans already think we have the ERA. So many people are like, didn't that already pass? Yes, it did pass. It passed Congress, but it hasn't been ratified. So another hurdle is just the awareness and educating people that need to realize it's never made it to the Constitution. And another thing that I get is that I feel equal. I already feel equal. I'm already equal, and I think that's great. I'm glad you feel that way. But I remind them that equality is not a feeling. Either you are or you aren't equal. And currently, women do not have constitutional equality. And then I wonder, does it matter to them that many people do not feel that feeling of equality or have the same experiences? Because it does matter to me. That's why I spend countless hours each month doing what I can to make changes to the system through advocacy. I see my work as like a macro social work. I have privileges as a white woman, a middle-class woman, a stay-at-home mom, or I work part-time from home. So I can go down in the middle of the day to meet with my representatives. But there's so many working women, some of them that are single and have to do multiple jobs, that have no time to go there. And they're facing more discrimination than I am. So I'm using my voice for them. So a lot of times people wonder what discrimination I have faced. And I honestly say not much. But I know women that have faced it, and it matters to me. For example, in Arizona this year, I was introduced to Angie from one of my friends in Mormons Berea in her ward. She's a working mom. She's a Mormon. And she's a Latino woman. She spent years training and in her field, it's male-dominated of meat butchering. And she said that no matter how many credentials she had or how many more years of experience she had than her colleagues, she was overlooked for promotions, and she was being paid less. She also faced harassment, sexual and verbal harassment, and her working environment wasn't ideal. But she keeps at it because her kids depend on her. At times, they were living out of her car. Now she lives with her sister to make ends meet. And this is not okay. I recorded her story. I invited her to a meeting with one of her representatives. And she said she had never felt so powerful. She actually, until this year, had never realized it could be any other way. And it can be. But like I said before, we should set our Constitution, our laws, to our ideals, not to the current prejudices, and hope that we attain them. It trickles into our culture and our everyday practices.
Well, so would it make a difference to men and women getting paid equally, your scale up there on the board?
Yes. So
tell me why.
Okay, so we have equal pay, because we do have an Equal Pay Act, but it's just not as strong. So it's not going to be the end-all, answer-all, but it allows for court cases to have strict level of scrutiny. Right now, sex discrimination is intermediate scrutiny, and that was created based on all of those court cases in the 70s by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They created a scrutiny level for sex discrimination based on all of those cases. And so if we can have a constitutional amendment that actually states equality of rights can't be denied based on sex, then it gives that, more cases will win. I think right now there are only like 40% of sex discrimination cases pass. We have Supreme Court justices telling us that if we had that in there, then it might have passed. But because some of them view the Constitution on how it was intended. And it was written for land-owning white men. And we've slowly had to adjust that over the years to make sure it includes all citizens and what citizens are in our country. So the pay gap has been painstakingly slow closing that gap. And there's a lot of factors what caused the pay gap, and that's a whole other debate. But people believe if we can have an amendment, if our Constitution makes it, the level of scrutiny goes up, and then those court cases have better legs to stand on. And then no matter what state they live in, they have the Constitution to look at, because some are working with ERAs in their state and some are not. Does that help? So it's not going to be like the best solution, but it is a solution that will help like the macro level. So I'm going to, there's another, a lot of other reasons why we're going to go into the weeds for a second, and then we're going to talk about our group and other Utah advocacy groups to show you like what you can do if you care about this. And then we're going to go from there. And I have a call to action for you guys today. And we're hoping that the last 20, 30 minutes can be like a discussion. Like if you guys want to move up, that'd be great. Or we'll just keep using the microphone and we're going to take questions and like collaborate and discuss, because there is a debate out there. As simple as it sounds, it's a debate. So Sarah's going to take over and she's going to talk a lot more about the whys and about our group.
All right, thanks for being here. So some of the weeds of the ERA. I think it's important to remember that with the 14th and 19th Amendment, citizenship became a gendered thing, became a gendered discussion. Lest we forget that the 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote, but did not give women full citizenship under the law, which is why we need the Equal Rights Amendment to be ratified. Without the ERA, the Constitution does not explicitly guarantee that the right it protects are equally held by all citizens without regard to sex. The first and still the only right specifically affirmed as equal for women and men is the right to vote. That's the only one specifically laid out in our Constitution. The Equal Rights Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution's 14th Amendment was first applied to sex discrimination only in 1971, and it has never been interpreted to grant equal rights on the basis of sex in the uniform and inclusive way that the ERA would. And when someone argues that we have the 14th Amendment to protect against sex discrimination, then I will reply with, and why did we need to add the 19th Amendment for women to access their right to vote? If that was going to be included in the 14th, then we wouldn't have needed the 19th, but it's not included in the 14th, so we need the 19th, and we need the ERA. The ERA would provide a clear judicial standard, as Anessa was just saying, for deciding cases of sex discrimination, since federal and state courts, some working with state ERAs and some without, still reflect confusion and inconsistency in dealing with such claims. It would also clarify sex discrimination jurisprudence and conclusively invalidate the claim of the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia that the Constitution, specifically the 14th Amendment, does not protect against sex discrimination. The ERA would provide a strong legal defense against a rollback of the significant advances in women's rights that have been achieved since the mid-20th century. Many of the rights women have gained have been made through statutes, which can be overturned, amended, or not renewed. As we are seeing with the Violence Against Women Act that was not renewed or funded this year, the ERA would be a permanent solution and would help us have that Violence Against Women Act be something that is funded and just the norm. And one thing that I also like, I'm in the medical field as a midwife, and I would love if there could be some more of a guarantee when it comes to medical testing, that it wasn't, that the male body would not continue to be the norm for medical advances. And I feel that strongly. I mean, the population I work with, they would all be excluded from such medical studies because they are either pregnant, lactating, or when I'm working with other women, they are menstruating. Those all will rule you out of a medical test. So that is a lot of women. That's half of the population, and it's a majority of that half that are not included. So I told someone that I was a midwife, and they said, "Oh, is that a new thing?" And I said, "No, I think it's literally the oldest profession." But obstetrics have kind of taken over everything. Midwifery, you know, took the back seat. But I mean, midwives, we've been around forever, but we've only studied the female body for about maybe 100-ish years, 150 years, maybe. I'll be generous and give them that. So I want it for the further advance of protecting women when it comes to new drugs and medical procedures. So that's another one. And without the RA, women regularly and men occasionally have to fight long, expensive, and difficult legal battles in an effort to prove that their rights are equal to those of the other sex. The ERA would improve the United States' standing in the world community as well. It's pretty sad. It's embarrassing that we don't have an Equal Rights Amendment. And, you know, it doesn't look like we are champions of human rights because we don't want to protect half of our population. The governing documents of many other countries affirm legal gender equality, but we need to step it up and have also be that example in our world community. So, Mormons for ERA, what are we? Mormons for ERA was in the 60s and 70s with Sonia Johnson and other members of the board back then, and I so appreciate what they did and all that they fought for. But who we claim to be today, we are, you don't have to be a, what do they call it? TBM Mormon, especially with, you know, Sunstone, there's more than one way to Mormon. We also did specifically choose to remain being called Mormons for ERA because Latter Day Saints for ERA, I mean, member, yeah. Yeah, this doesn't look pretty on a button, and we just didn't want to do that. And Mormons, you know, maybe they'll know that we're just who we are. We are a big tent Mormonism. We will any spectrum because we know that Mormonism is it's a culture as well. It's not just a religion and it's people's background. You know, I have several friends that are part of Mormons for ERA and a lot of them are not active and that's fine because they still speak the Mormon language. So they can still put on their Mormon hat and go to their legislators and have that conversation. I will put on that hat when I need to access a more conservative Republican, well, which so are all of them, in Utah. Also, I'm in Utah, Ines is in Arizona. I don't know if we made that clear, but I'm in Utah, so I know who I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with a lot of Mormons. Those are my people. But we represent a family-centered and religious community that wants to dispel misconceptions of the ERA. So we can say, hey, well, I'm a Mormon and I want the ERA. I'm not like how the church's stance used to be in the 70s. Thank goodness they are neutral. We come from our shared history. We all have a shared history and this community through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And we all have the goal of ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment. And we recognize and how this fits in with the gospel too, that there's a need for a constitutional amendment stating equality of rights for men and for women. And again, we are the full spectrum, big tent Mormonism, everyone active, disaffected, everyone welcome. If you're able to put on that hat and speak the Mormon language, we want you to be able to go and speak to your legislators. For now, we are acting informally. We are working to reinstate our nonprofit status this year, but for now, we're just hitting the ground running. And also just this morning, we gathered with other groups that have on their agenda for the year ratifying the ERA. It was a great, lively discussion. We had about 15 women there from representing different organizations. Also, we want men involved because a lot of our legislators are men, so we want men to be able to also come and speak to men. I will love to have you speak on my behalf if it will mean that the ERA will be ratified. You are welcome to speak on my behalf or with me to these legislators. We plan to provide a specific function to bolster these existing ERA organizations, starting with our meeting that we had this morning. And we don't want to reinvent the wheel in regards to equality and the Equal Rights Amendment. And we're forming, I believe we are calling just this gathering of minds, the ERA Coalition Utah. So if you would like to be involved with either the Mormons for ERA or the ERA Coalition Utah, I will have this sign-up sheet, and you can specify on there how you want to be involved. Maybe you just want to be notified if we want people to be on Capitol Hill, if we need you to send a postcard, make a call. You can specify that on here. We are not lobbyists. We are an advocacy, not activism group, because knowing the language, activism can be a scary word to some Mormons, especially to our white leaders that happen to be Mormon. So we want to speak their language. And at times, Mormons for Erie has been permitted to have meetings that they maybe normally would I would not have had I not had my Mormons for ERA hat on. Our name, it comes with some history, and people, though, know they can place us in context of humans and how to interact with us and which language to use with us and things that I might bring to the table when talking with my legislators. We want to present ourselves in a way that is not off-putting to conservatives, because we want to actually get our foot in the door and talk to our legislators, and we want to be that bridge for them. We want to build relationships with the Republican offices and be a resource for them, help them with educating. We want to provide packets before our session starts, our legislative session, to let them know, no, we still need the ERA ratified. It is not yet ratified, and we want to help you understand why this is so important to me and so many people that I represent while here in your office. And when our Mormons for ERA hat is on, we are respectful and professional, sharing in formal and informal settings how the ERA is good for families and for the economy, and good for Mormons, since Mormons are people living in America. So, spotlighting. There's several groups, some that are also newly formed that we had meet with us even this morning. But we had representatives from the League of Women Voters at our meeting, from the AAUW, the American Association of University Women, and NABO, the National Association of Women Business Owners, and also FAIR Utah, which, what does that stand for?
Decided not to make it an acronym.
It's not an acronym. All right. FAIR Utah, but they... Yeah, they're going to tackle equality issues specifically in Utah. So they were all at this meeting this morning. We also had others from, it was a very hopeful meeting. That's what it was, knowing that we had lots of energy in that room to propel and move us forward towards ratifying the ERA and having bodies where we need to have bodies present. Again, so on this sign-up sheet, and you can say, no, I don't actually want you to contact me. Again, only if it's for a specific action, or like today we will have letters that you can attach, you can sign your name to, that we can send in to Romney and to Lee.
Yeah, let's do
the
call down.
Yeah.
Right here is our letter. If you're willing, we're going to have everyone sign it, and we are going to mail it to Senator Mike Lee and Senator Mitt Romney, and this is what it says. Regarding Senate Joint Resolution Number 6, removing the deadline for ratification. As a constituent, I request that you, as long as you live in Utah, I have another one for Arizonans. I request that you co-sponsor the bipartisan SJ Resolution 6, Murkowski and Cardin, to remove the deadline for ratification of the ERA Equal Rights Amendment. The ERA was first passed by Congress in 1972 and sent out to the states. To date, 37 states have ratified the ERA. Only one more state is needed. Utah was once a beacon for women's rights. Women could vote in Utah in 1870 and were the first women to ever cast a vote in the United States due to having a vote before Wyoming. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints shifted to neutrality on the topic. We feel compelled to support this amendment because we know it is good for families and the economy when we have higher gender equity markers in a society. The ERA has enjoyed massive public support for decades. A 2012 poll for the Daily Coast, blah, blah, blah. Posed the question, do you think the Constitution should guarantee equal rights for men and women or not? 91% agreed that the Constitution should contain a guarantee of equal rights between the sexes. 2001, Opinion Research Corporation commissioned by the ERA Campaign Network of Princeton, New Jersey, found 96% of respondents believed that male and female citizens should have equal rights, and 88% thought that the U.S. Constitution should make that clear. Utah can make history and reclaim its place in the march towards equality by ensuring that the ERA is ratified and that the artificial deadline is not a barrier. Sincerely, Mormons for ERA supporters. So if that is something you agree with, you can write your name on it, and we'll collect some more signatures, and we will mail this, and it's something you did today to let your representative know that you want them to lift the deadline. So
there's a zip code on that?
Right. Yes, if you, I would add your name and zip code. So we're going to have that. We can pass that around right now. Let's go to discussion. Some people might not like the label Mormon, so that's why we're letting you know that there are other organizations that you can work with if you want to become an advocate. You had a question?
So you referred a few times that there's only one state required, but yes. A couple of states Idaho.
Right. There was 5 states that rescinded their vote. That is also going to be a hurdle for some people. But the precedent shows that recensions are not counted. There's other amendments that are in our Constitution right now that had states try to rescind before the count was taken. And I forgot the entity for the United States that enters it. They didn't count those recensions.
Is there a chance that states that hadn't ratified, because Arizona and Nevada,
say that again?
So I saw the map and it was mostly the states in the south.
Yes.
Right? And so is there a chance that Florida or any of those would
split? Right now, Florida and Georgia and South Carolina's bills are still in play because their session hasn't ended. And they have a bill which is introduced. Not all 13 states had one. Utah did not have a bill introduced this year. It did by Dukakis, or what, how do you say his name? Dukakis?
Dukakis
had introduced it for about 3 years, but not this past year. Kwan had another one that was trying to bolster the Equal Rights Amendment that's in the state constitution. So yes, there is a chance, but if you just want the inside scoop, the best chance for the 38th state is Virginia. Virginia is it will probably happen the next year or two. Arizona has the second best chance. So just based on the numbers and who the legislators are, how many supporters are in the state, Virginia is the closest. They lost by a tie. The fact that they even got it to a vote is huge. I mean, Illinois and Nevada passed it in the last couple years. So Virginia is the best shot. Arizona is the second best shot. But I would love the poetic justice of Utah surprising everybody and voting on it this next session. Wouldn't that be incredible? So there is an effort, and there's already discussions starting with 4 different Utah legislators to introduce a bill in January, but their session is only like 45 days. So we're going to have a bill ready to go to be introduced on the first day. And then we're hoping that in the meantime, you guys could already be educating those who represent you to make sure that they're paying attention to this bill for Utah to have a vote. And then I'm hoping, though, that we have a few more months before all of these state sessions start up again, because ours ended in June, Virginia's has ended, that we can lift the deadline. The fact that Senator Murkowski and Senator Cardin worked together on the Senate Joint Resolution is also a big deal. I mean, if you've been paying attention for decades, the last 2 years is a big deal. It's actually, I was here talking about it 4 years ago, just trying to get people to even pay attention or care, but now they are. The people have been paying attention, and people are caring, and we have a shot. I finally have confidence in saying that there is a shot, but we have our best shot if we can get them to lift the deadline first. And they still have that choice. It's right. The first time in 38 years, the House had a congressional hearing on the ERA like 2 months ago. If you guys were paying attention, 2 months ago, the Judiciary Committee had a hearing on the ERA, and they discussed whether or not to lift the deadline, the merits of the Equal Rights Amendment. There was somebody there that was showing why we don't need it and we shouldn't do it. And 2 people saying, these were all like experts in the field. And it was led by Nader. And right now the House has a majority, but the Senate has a bipartisan bill. So I think that that's going to be the first hurdle. If 38 states do ratify, Virginia's the best shot, then we're looking at court battles. And I would prefer the court not to decide whether or not it goes into the Constitution. Yes.
Can I, before we keep
going. Can I encourage anyone who has questions to come up and use the mic since we are recording the session? And if we want to do a little more of an open conversation, can I ask people to come closer just to make that easier?
So what are the stated objections? Why in 2019 are people still opposed to this?
That's a good question. It is, some of the objections are kind of, if they don't believe it should ever be in the equal rights, in the Constitution, the objections are not holding up anymore. I've heard people say, I was on a radio show with Kathy Herod, who leads the Center for Policy in Arizona, and she said that she used her talking point was, if someone feels like they're a woman and then they're sent to a female prison, dun dun dun. So that was her main fear tactic. But most of the arguments that work are just using the rescissions that states rescinded, that there was a deadline, and we got to get all over all those legal hurdles. But it's not impossible.
So I do remember the original amendment. I'm just old enough to remember it, and we were for it, and we were alone in the Utah
High
County
five.
For that. the main objections that I heard on the playground in elementary school was the bathroom bill.
Yes.
We are going to have
that's
we're
the
integrate
other one.
The bathrooms.
Right. So that is another one that's still being used. But that's already been debated in courts now, and federal courts have already made decisions about bathrooms. Like the way my Republican Mormon senator said to a group of Republicans, we had an ERA forum in our district, he said, it's not like we all have to be the same. So everyone has a right to the bathroom. It's not like all of a sudden we're going to have one huge bathroom we all have to use. So the bathroom issue scares people, I know. But every human has a right. And I also, if there's anyone out there who needs this news flash, women are people. And that includes trans women and women of color and poor women. And it's a basic about equality of rights not being the same. So yes, people bring up the bathroom issue still, but that's already being decided without an equal rights amendment. Yeah.
This.
Yeah, and we use them in our homes, and there's lots of places with unisex bathrooms, and I don't think it is as strong an issue as some people want it to be. And I think those loudest minorities do not represent the majority of our population. They may be the loudest, but when you're walking around grocery stores and parades and events and concerts, you're not going around yelling at people about what you disagree with. I think social media has distorted what we really are. The majority of our population agrees with. And those that are shouting about the bathrooms do not represent a majority of the people, because the polls showed that most Americans support a statement in our Constitution about equality of the sexes. But those small groups are well organized and funded and loud. So yes, they do make an opposing, but they're not as the same. Like the Center for Arizona Policy has been trying to push back, but man, they are drowned out by how many advocates we have in Arizona. It's been impressive this last year to be in Arizona. We've quadrupled our followers and our supporters and we our volunteer lists. We had someone at the Arizona legislature every single day with a sign that says ERA now, and someone came up, and we had billboards up, and someone came up to one of the state legislator, one of the lobbyist groups said, what lobbying firm are they using? And I'm like, no, we're not using a lobbyist firm. This was just a really great amount of momentum after the Women's March for people to get involved in the political process, and they realized, more and more people are realizing we never did it. We never got it across the finish line.
Can I actually just voice a question? I've heard a lot of the resistance that I was kind of told back in the day, right? Because I was born the year after things kind of shut down, was that the concern is that the ERA by dissolving the distinction right under the law, that it would create vulnerabilities, that it would invalidate laws that maybe are passed specifically to protect people on the basis of sex,
maternity,
maternity, and things like that. Yes. Like, so what is the response to that, and how has the legal analysis and the arguments kind of responded to that?
The most legal experts do not worry about it ending those rights, because it's the simple statement is about sex discrimination, and you can, and there are some states that try to say that if you discriminate against a pregnant woman, that's not sex discrimination. Although only women can be pregnant, so they are being discriminated based on their sex because they're the ones that can be pregnant. So I can just simple answer because I'm not the expert in that specific topic, but I can tell you that I've read and listened to and heard all of them speak on it, that it would not impose upon that. And another one that made me think about the opposition saying legal distinctions is that I already forgot. Never mind. Move on. Sorry. You made me think of, I forgot a talking point. But now I forgot again. Anyone else?
Any other comments, questions? Can you come use the mic? So
I can repeat it if you don't want to get up.
That's fine.
Do you have suggestions for those of us who live in states that have already passed?
Okay, so she asked what people who already live in states that have ratified the ER, what they can do. So yes, Minnesota and some of the other states have a lot of really active advocates for the ERA because they want it to pass. They want other states to follow suit. So they enter the national conversation. There's the ERA coalition. They talk about lifting the deadline because that is your U.S. representatives. So I would, this call to action, what state do you live in?
Maryland.
So you're in Maryland. Yeah, there are ERA advocates in Maryland, and you're close enough to Virginia in my mind when I look at a map. Some of those a lot of New York advocates have been helping either by advisory or by funding or donating to Virginia. So I would do that.
Yes, Jane Ann went like this, like she had money between her fingers when she asked that. Yeah, I mean, money goes a long way in
five
advocacy.
Minutes.
Yeah.
You got five more minutes.
Any other questions?
We end at 6:30.
Oh, 6:30.
Five more minutes till you're supposed to do
till
questions.
Till five.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm like...
Another thing I was going to show you guys. We might end up ending early.
It's okay.
So
my rule number one is no one ever complains about going home early.
True. Yeah, there's Mormon Sphere A buttons and then regular
ERA,
yes. Well,
Arizona ones.
But the big font is ERA.
Can you talk more about the concern about this ending up in the courts? Is it just that it'll take longer and be more complex, or is there a fear that this would lose in the courts?
Do you want to answer that?
I mean, you probably know more about
that. Is a great question. Legal scholars and constitutional law professors believe and think that they're positive that we would get it. If we get to 38 states, they have a good, strong argument of how the deadline was first. None of the states voted on the deadline. They voted on those three sections. So we can argue it in court, but it will take longer, and it will become. We don't want it to become another battle. The best option is to lift the deadline, but it's not impossible. If we do get to 38, it'll go to courts, however long that takes, and it would be amazing if it passed. But another reason why states are not ratifying or voting on it, because they think that we can't because of the deadline. But Illinois and Nevada did anyways, and we hope we assume that their vote will be counted.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. He wondered if the current Supreme Court would, how they would vote on it. Ruth Bader Ginsburg spoke on this recently. I'm going to quote her horribly, but she felt, somebody just asked her this last week about this, and she felt like we don't need to worry. Some people are so worried about this more conservative court. And she's like, even if they seem more conservative or they're being voted in by Republicans, they're not the same as they were in the 1960s. She said that our society has changed enough that it shouldn't be stressful for us about our rights being infringed upon because, You know, when she went to law school, she was one of the only women. And there were no women professors, and that's not the same anymore. So those who are coming up have been educated in a more equal society, and we assume that even if they might... we can go into the abortion debate. A lot of the reasons why they've been put in place is hoping that they can help with overturning Roe v. Wade, or at least allowing states to have more power to restrict abortion rights. And she mentioned that she thought that the current Supreme Court would support women's issues more than the fears that they didn't in the 60s and 70s. So, but again, we can't know until we're there. It's all just fingers crossed. I don't like the fingers crossed option. I'd rather the Senate and the House do their job like they did in 79, and extend or lift the deadline. I mean, this 27th Amendment took 200 years to ratify, but because it was going to help women, they gave us 7. It's kind of ridiculous and unconstitutional.
Any other questions or ideas? Anything?
No. Yep.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi. That's my sister, Kimberly.
Hi. I got here late, so maybe if I'm one of the last people to ask or a question, you could maybe sum up a little bit of what you've been talking about, because I missed it all with my kids.
I'm going to give like a 1-minute summary. Okay. So the Equal Rights Amendment is an amendment to the U.S. Constitution guaranteeing equal rights of the sexes. Equality of rights shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on the account of sex. So we're trying to get Kimberly, into the U.S. Constitution. We need one more state to ratify. We need the deadline lifted, and then we're successful. Then we can finally have our Constitution show where we stand in our society. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. And we mentioned about like how the Mormon Church in the past opposed. Now they're neutral, so they're staying out of it, which means that they seem to feel like it's not going to infringe upon their religious rights. I was asked earlier in an interview if the church was worried that if the Equal Rights Amendment passed, that they would be forced to ordain women, and the answer is no. Religious rights are very well protected.
Any other questions?
Right. Oh, yes. I'm sorry, I keep answering questions. I'm on a roll. That was another issue in the past, is that they were worried that women would be drafted or that they would even serve in combat. So women are already serving in combat, and a federal court has already decided that it was sex discrimination to have only men be on the draft. So women are now subject to being drafted. So that the Equal Rights Amendment will not change that either. It's already been decided. We can all be drafted. If you're young enough and healthy enough, and I'm just saying it was decided that it was sex discrimination to have a male-only draft.
Isn't your senator a fighter pilot?
Is what?
Your senator?
Sally, is she not a former fighter?
Right, exactly. My current Arizona senator, Martha McSally, fought in combat. She was one of the first jet pilots. She was badass. Yes.
Still is.
Yes, still women is. Have fought in combat, and they are capable, apparently. We can do it. We can do lots of things.
So let's not get to the point where we have a draft. No draft. Let's not.
I know. I hope we never have to do a draft ever again.
Yeah. Anything else?
That was
else?
A good question. Does anybody want a sash or a button?
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. Come on up.
Come on up. We have. Does anybody want to sign the letter to your?
I didn't sign it yet.
Because that means today you did something to help pass the or ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. If you sign the letter, we have this table up here. I take donations for sashes. If you're willing to throw in $1 for a button, that's great. If not, I'm going to be nice and give you one.
Dig in, Jane. There's tons in there. Different designs. So the
orange bag is all of the ERA Yes or ERA Now. And the brown bag are Mormons for ERA.
Do they like the sash?
These are all Mormons for ERA. Perfect. So I made most of those buttons myself.
Nice.
With my little
Oh, they tried and it was
put on there, Buck?
Yeah. You have it.
So I think we're just going to conclude, and then we can just talk and use the room for for just private conversations. So thank you, guys. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.